Well, hello, friends. Thanks so much for tuning into Fathers Collective, what I'm now going to call Season 1 podcast, which was Walking the Camino. I will be back with Season 2. And on Season 2, I want to interview dads who I think have gotten it right. So we're going to hear from a wide range of dads with all sorts of different kids and different parenting situations who got it right. So stay tuned. That'll be coming out maybe in the next couple of months, maybe later in the fall. But thanks so much for listening along to this first Camino podcast series. I am currently sitting up here on my roof in Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan, right where I recorded the very first episode. Hard to believe, but I'm back. It's over. We did it. And it's a little surreal. This time yesterday, I was in Spain, and today here I am back in New York. And I thought I'd do one final episode and just update you on my final learnings, what were the highlights of the trip. A lot of people ask for Camino prep. If you were going to do it again, what would you do or what should I learn? Some practical things on that. And then lastly, a few more motivational issues connected to it. So yes, it does feel like a little bit of a dream. It's amazing how quickly life will punch you back in the face in New York. And I got up at 5 today, was walking around the city and was just reminded I'm not in Spain anymore. The other thing that's reminding me is that my feet are destroyed. Destroyed. So the blisters are all healing up, but the wreckage is pretty incredible. And so I'm looking forward to my feet healing. It still hurts to walk around even with flip-flops or some light shoes on. So I'm looking forward to my feet getting better. But here's a few highlights. Some people have asked, like, what were the highlights of having walked 500 miles across Spain? Highlights. So here's a few thoughts I have. Number one, immersion into another life. It is very, very hard to create experiences where you are fully present for sustained periods of time anymore. We all know we should. But it's very, very hard to do that. I read a book several years back. I think the book was called Living into Focus. And it was all about developing things they call focal practices, which is ways of doing things that demand that you be present. And I've always loved that idea. How do I have practices that demand my presence? And I've got to tell you, the Camino was the most immersive thing I've ever done. I did not feel pulled back or torn or drawn back into my other responsibilities. It was actually kind of like a spell descends on you and you're in Planet Camino. It's not just that you're in another country. It's sort of hard to describe, but it just demands that you are there. And that immersion and presence was one of my favorite things. I wasn't on a sabbatical as such. This was a Christian pilgrimage, which is a little different. So it had definitely a particular holy intent. And the Camino is not restful or relaxing, but it was definitely something that just immersed me. Second thing I loved about it was just space for reflection and contemplation. The way we structured our Camino, we got up early and walked every day. So I basically had every afternoon and evening free. And I used that time primarily for reading and discussion and processing with Nate. And then I just had hours of just time to literally sit with my thoughts and to reflect what God was doing in my heart, getting in touch with my emotions and feelings, seeing what surfaced in my heart when there was a space just to reflect on it. And so having huge, huge chunks of time for reflection and contemplation. Now, those of you who know me know I'm a pretty contemplative and reflective person. And by that, I mean, I probably spend an above average amount of time processing and thinking and being quiet and trying to discern what's happening in my life. This was just at another level. And there was nothing really else to do. And I only read 4 books on the Camino. And I just spent a lot of time thinking. That was a gift, a real gift. Another thing I actually really enjoyed was watching, this is going to sound sort of like a weird statement, but watching the failure of secularization. And there were so many people with deep, deep heart longings, people aching for transcendence and meaning, and they were doing the Camino because they couldn't find it in their regular secular lives. And the secularization hypothesis, which people have written about, Rodney Stark addresses at the end of one of his books, he's got a chapter on it. They basically thought that with scientific progress and enlightenment and the increase of Western values and individuality and postmodernism, all those sorts of things, they thought the world would become increasingly secular, but it's actually become more religious. And seeing thoroughly modern post-Christian people aching for more, to me, it was actually like a really encouraging reminder of the truth of our faith. And that was like was a highlight for me, and it opened the door to tons of wonderful conversations. Speaking of that, another highlight was just the relationships. We met people from every kind of background, from all over the world, people from all over Europe, people from Korea, people from other faith traditions. And there's a term that people use, it's like finding your Camino family. And you would see these little tribes form, and they would be so eclectic, but it's just people that were walking these different legs together, and they were legs of the Camino together, and they would just bond, and it just walked. It just worked. So you go so deep, so quick, with no pretense. There's no judgmentalism. And you just find yourselves in these like really deep conversations quickly, because you've got nothing to defend, and you know you're not going to see these people for the rest of your life, and there's no ego involved. And those relationships were really life-giving and really joy-filled. Another highlight, physical challenge. It is good to do hard things. I mean, I live a lot of my life, you know, I probably walk 5 miles a day on average in New York. I don't live a particularly physical life. I'm not a blue-collar worker anymore. I don't work with my hands. So I love doing something that was really, really hard. And I love the fact that pushing yourself reminds you of your mortality and vulnerability. And, you know, even the people who were like who trained really hard and were in incredible shape, CrossFit type bodies, still had sore knees and still were getting horrible blisters. And it just that physical challenge, that reminding of your body, your mortality, that was good. We both really enjoyed that. Another thing I loved was the pilgrim metaphor. I cannot explain to you how badly you are constantly trying to get rid of stuff in your backpack. The compound effect of hauling 1 or 2 extra pounds was huge. And it's just like that reminder that life is a journey and transient, and we're not called to sort of fill our life with material goods and primarily value ourselves. Like, that stuff can be a burden and a baggage. You felt that. And we don't spend a lot of time in our culture really believing that. We live in a culture of accumulation. I mean, for goodness sake, in America, we have storage units. We're in our huge houses. We can't even have enough space in our huge houses. So we have to rent spaces to put our stuff that we're not currently using. Breaking that thinking through physical metaphor was a real gift. And just going from place to place, I really enjoyed. Another thing I loved was the power of simplicity. You're just going one day at a time. You're just trying to take care of the basics. You're just trying to be content and make it through and get the rewards of that day. And there was honestly a tremendous freedom in just following the yellow arrows. You're not trying to overthink it. You're not trying to invent it. You're not trying to rationalize it. You're just like, where are the yellow arrows? Am I on the path? And there was something really beautiful to just surrendering to the path and will of another. And obviously you get that in the Christian life. It's such an obvious metaphor, but the physical freedom of trusting that was really life-giving. Last thing in this section here was on geography and culture. Many of these villages, you feel like they are just unchanged in hundreds of years. You're walking through a village and an old farmer and his wife come out with their cows that they're walking to be milked. You're meeting people whose lives are, for the most part, the same as they were 200 years ago, in many ways untouched by technology. And, you know, I live 2 blocks from Times Square. If you could see where I'm sitting right now and what I'm looking around, I mean, I live in the belly of the beast. And to just see such other lives and experience was so life-giving. And it was beautiful. I loved the rhythm of a siesta where everything shuts down and you just sleep. I took full advantage of that. It was beautiful. The food was great. The Spanish people were very kind and very patient with my lack of Spanish. It was beautiful countryside, and I miss that. And to be honest with you, it's like I miss being on the Camino. I miss that simplicity, and I think it's something that has definitely marked me. So those are a few observations on what it is, a few highlights from the Camino. And in the next section here, we're going to jump into Camino prep. If you're sitting here going, okay, John, I'm inspired, I want to do it. If you were going to do it again, what would you do? That's what we're going to cover in the next section. Okay, this next section I want to talk about what to do if you want to do the Camino. And a lot of people asked, like one person on Instagram said, hey man, did you think about training for it? And, you know, try to be kind on social media. And I think they were a new follower. The answer was, you know, I actually did think about that. That's why I trained for it for 6 months before I went on it. So I actually took the training really seriously, but I didn't get the right training as far as I can tell. And I will tell you this. The people that trained for it in some capacity versus the people who didn't train and said, I'll just let the Camino be my trainer, there was a stark difference. So even though I didn't do all the right training, I had built enough of a base where I wasn't as physically destroyed as some of the folks who did no training. And so maybe your thinking is, hey, I've got a pretty good base level of fitness. Don't think like that. You need to train for this thing. So here's what I did. I did about 6 months, and my basic training structure was, I don't know if you've heard of the company GoRuck, but I'm a huge GoRuck fan. Love that. Love what they do. Love what they're about. And they basically offer these backpacks. They're expensive, but I think worth it, that you can load these rucking plates, and they're just basically up to 45 pound plates of weight, and you put it in and you basically walk. You put the backpack on and you walk. And because you're carrying everything in the Camino in your backpack, and they say you should try and have 10% of your body weight in your backpack or whatever. So I weigh about 225. So I had about 30 pounds on my back, and I was continually trying to make it lighter. But so I bought a backpack and I put a 30 pound plate in, and 3 to 5 times a week, I would basically walk between 5 and 15 miles. So I'd try and do 3 5-mile rucks with 45-pound weights, and then one long one, almost like marathon training, Hal Higdon's marathon training, if you've heard of that. And that definitely built up my back. Like, I'm not sure my back got sore. My upper back got backpack sore even once. So my shoulders were fine, my neck was fine. A lot of people, that's where they experienced real pain. So that was my basic training. It was like, hey, I'm going to be hiking 15 miles a day with this weight on. Why don't I simulate that experience? Now, the challenge is where I live in New York City is basically flat. So I did all of my rucking for the most part on flat or very, very light incline hills, and that proved to be wrong. So here's my advice on training and prepping for the Camino. Train for 6 months to build up. Now, you might be saying, why that long? That's so long. Psychologists tell us that much of the enjoyment of any given activity is based on the build up and preparation, not the event itself. So it's the anticipation that is adding richness to the experience. So training and looking forward to it and getting out there and imagining it, I love that. And it gave me something very, very real and fun to look forward to. So here's what I would do. You mainly want legs and cardio for the Camino. So squats, tons of squats, calf raises, anything you can do to build your legs is huge. And then you want to get some sprints, and I would put like sprinting up hills. You'll be amazed at how many hills you go up and how your cardio will take a beating on this. And so if I was to build a routine, it would be something like this. 2 days a week doing like literally leg workouts and weights. One day doing jogging, you know, sort of like working your way up to 5 miles, and then one day of these longer rucks with weights. So you're getting that strength training in your legs, you're building your endurance through jogging, and then you're actually getting the experience of the weights. And I would get as many hills in as possible. And so to me, that's my Camino advice. Give it a lot of time, build up to it, hit your legs and cardio really hard, and go out with long walks. The beauty, by the way, of the Go Ruck is you're going to look like a little bit of an idiot if you have a full hiking backpack on and you're just walking down, you know, the suburbs, the sidewalk in the suburbs. The Go Ruck, I had the Rucker, and it's a super small backpack, smaller than a regular backpack, loaded with 45 pounds in it. So you just look like you're doing a normal workout. So that's what I'd say physically. Treat it like a marathon. Sort of vary your training, emphasize your legs and your cardio, and you should be good to go. Question two, when should I do the Camino? So I read online the most popular months for the Camino are June and October. That's just what I'd read. To me, the big question is, how do you handle heat? Because the heat will get you. Now, many of you saw on Instagram that we were there for that heat wave. So we were there when they broke all heat records in Spain. And I'm telling you, it was horrific. Some days it was 108. And if that may not sound like much, just go put a backpack on with 30 pounds and go walk up a hill for 15 miles in 100 degrees. The heat was the killer. So if heat is a real problem for you. Now, that being said, I met two people from Louisiana who were doing it, and they were like literally that women in their 50s laughing like, I'm from Louisiana, there's nothing. And she was out in the heat of the day like it was nothing with a hat on, just powering through it. Heat's like kryptonite for me. So we decided to leave at 4 and 5 a.m. to beat the heat. And so we basically had free afternoons. A lot of other people had very different strategies. But to me, you know, how hot do you want it to be? If you can't handle the heat, it starts getting cold up in the mountains, which means you have to carry more gear, which means you need more weight. So that's a factor. But I recommend doing it in the summer. That's when most people do it. That's when it's open and all the albergues are there, and it's really beautiful. Summer in Spain is really, really beautiful. Other practical advice: take care of your feet. I did not bring, I really broke my shoes in. And I don't mean I wore them for 2 weeks before. I mean, I trained in my shoes. And I'd read so many blogs about people's feet being destroyed because they didn't break their shoes in. So I had no blister problems until the heat kicked in. And I just wasn't prepared to take care of my feet properly. Now, there's a pharmacy in just about every town, so I was able to get the supplies I needed. But I would encourage you, bring supplies and first aid for your feet. Honestly, the most effective thing was duct tape for me. And after you put proper bandages and all the creams on your blisters to take care of them, wrapping them in duct tape provided sort of an insulation from the pain. And like I'd mentioned, one of my friends who's a Marine who had to do these crazy long hikes said that of all of the first aid stuff they used, duct tape was the most effective. Bring the first aid stuff that you need. Now, the practical thought, I cannot underestimate or state this strongly enough. You need less stuff than you think for this trip. I didn't meet a single person who didn't leave stuff somewhere. You're just shedding non-essentials. And after I had read all the blogs where people said, you don't need this, you don't need that, I thought, I've got this down to a bare minimum. And I left almost half of my stuff in Spain. So I will put somewhere, probably on a website, like my essential packing list. But I'm telling you, you need less stuff than you need. You need a smaller bag than you think. You probably don't need a sleeping bag. You need less clothes than you think. You're going to be leaving stuff behind. Think ultra, ultra, being uncomfortable with it, minimal. Next thought here, I'm getting a little too practical. Next thought here, you have to determine what sort of experience you want. So a lot of people are doing the Camino and they are financially restrained, which means like they have no money, therefore they have to do it as cheap as hard as possible. You know, by the grace of God, finances were not a factor on this trip. So I didn't have an unlimited budget, obviously, but I had a very, very healthy budget. So I wasn't, I wasn't trapped financially. So, like I said, we stayed in albergues almost the whole time, which means we stayed in hostels, except I think 4 nights where people graciously gave us money to stay in hotels. But we stayed in private rooms. And so we got a private room for two, on average for $30. And to get a room, to get a bunk in a room with 10 or 15 people was $20. And I can't tell you for me how good of an experience that was. So do you want to do this thing super cheap? Do you want to do it medium? Do you want to do it high end? Figure out your finances on this. And I saw a lot of people having bad experiences because they didn't have money. And so make sure you have an understanding of the kind of experience you want. Also, don't buy into the pilgrim legalism that says, well, you know, in order for this to be authentic, you have to sleep in a hostel. It's like, look, man, says who? Says who? Have the experience you want, but determine in advance what that is. Another theme here connected to Camino Prep is understanding your motivation. So for me, I had a big goal in this. Closing out the primal path, bonding with my son, helping him process his gap year. The goal of the Camino for me was finishing up an intensive discipleship process with my son. So that shaped my motivation and framing of the year. Most people who did the Camino did it in major transition, and so they were between major events or seasons. They needed a sense of direction and didn't know what to do next. They were reflecting on major milestones, 30, 40, 50, 60, or anniversaries. Depth, hungry for more than what their current life was giving them. Simplicity, sick of the pace and shallowness of modern life and its conventions. And honestly, the thing that blew my mind, the amount of people just trying to lose weight. So many people were like, I just thought I'd lose weight. I was like, gosh, there is so... So I got back and weighed myself. I lost 15 pounds on the Camino. And that wasn't one of my motivations, because you're just eating so many carbs to have the energy to complete it. But I was like, there's so many easier ways. Keto, juice cleanse, eat less calories, than losing weight by walking 500 miles. But I was amazed at how many people said I wanted to lose weight. But those are the major motivations. The people who I spoke to who are having the most transcendent experiences, like we're really getting a lot out of the Camino, they're people who went into it with a clear question or purpose. They either had a theme or a motivation or a heart. So I would determine in advance. One of my friends who was sort of like my Camino mentor, his theme was like, come thou fount of every blessing. And he basically did the Camino to that hymn. And I was like, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. And so that was his theme on just like cementing his heart to God. And so I think making sure you have a theme and motivation for why you're doing it is important. A note on timing. If I could change one thing about the Camino, is I would have taken more time. I had booked my return ticket and I followed a guide, John Briley's guide, and he breaks the Camino into 33 stages, and each stage is a year in the life of Jesus' life. I like that, but man, you need space for rest days. So my advice would be, just if I was to personally do it again, I would literally practice the Sabbath on the Camino. I would hike for 6 days, and wherever I was, I would just stop for that day and have a Sabbath day. And I feel like that actually would have been the perfect rhythm. Push for 6 days and then just rest. Cease, rest, embrace, feast. Enjoy wherever you happen to be and let your body catch up and heal and just process what's happened the previous week. So to me, build space in. If you get injured, you know, I hurt my back, which actually turned out to be, I think, one of my glute flexors or something like that. But the glute hip exercises basically fixed it in 2 days. If I'd had time, I would have just stopped rather than having to get transportation for those 2 days. Leave space, leave time. Now, I wouldn't leave it completely unended, because the Camino could turn into a lifestyle and you could be there for 6 months because it's so great. Definitely have space. If I can give you an app recommendation, the Wisely, W-I-S-E, Wisely, Wise Guides app saved my life. A fellow New Yorker, Bram, who's teaches at Friends Seminary here in New York, I bumped into him on, I think, the second or third day, and he told me about it. That saved me. So it's an app that works even when you're offline, and we would have been lost so many times if we didn't have that app. So yeah, there's Briley's guide we liked, but the app was the most helpful thing about knowing where we are. So you, every Camino is different, but knowing what you're after and having time to go into it and getting your motivation right and figuring out the kind of experience that you have, going in with your eyes wide open a little bit, that's going to be a helpful thing for you. So last thing I'm going to close with here is spiritual lessons that I took away from this, and that'll be the last section for this podcast. Okay, my closing thoughts are basically about what I felt like God did in my heart on the Camino. What spiritual lessons were takeaways? One very obvious one for me was just like the visceral death of comparison. The death of comparison. You know, I wrote a book called The Burden is Light, Liberating Life from the Tyranny of Performance and Success. And I had a chapter in there on comparison. And in there, I had an analogy of running a marathon. Let me tell you, that times 100 on the Camino, you have to walk your own race. There's some days where you just feel strong physically and you're passing people. I mean, I'm hiking this with Nate, who's in the best shape of his life. You know, his metabolism's on fire. He's got unlimited energy. I mean, he was just cranking. So some days I was struggling to keep up with him. So we did have a pretty fast pace in general. There's other days, like old women were passing us and just cranking it out. And you just very, very quickly say, you know what? This is actually not a race. And you learn to just listen to your own body and listen to the day and make sense of what was happening around you. So I was just so grateful for another reminder of the death of comparison. Look, the goal is to get to Santiago, and you got to get there at your own pace. You got to walk your own race. And, you know, I live in New York. I've wrestled with comparison my whole life, and it was just another beautiful reminder of God breaking comparison off of my life, just letting me be me, letting other people be them without judgment, and just enjoying who God's made you to be. I appreciate it. It's hard to experience this idea of what's called thin places, you know, the Celtic idea that by simply doing things, and this is why we as a society are very, very aware of marking the past, you know, with the current push in the South to get rid of monuments that remind people of the Civil War or white supremacy. It's why it's like we're aware that these markers of the past have an impact on the present, and that can be for bad, but it can also be for good. And the Celtic vision of the thin spaces, which is like places people with holy intent have sought God before, that there's something to that. I don't know what the biblical theology of that is, if it's, you know, Bethel, surely God was in this place. I mean, I don't know, but there was just something even psychological to knowing that for 1,000 years people have walked this way with some sort of holy intent in their hearts on a spiritual journey. And I enjoyed that. I love the sacredness of that. You know, the very last night I was out just celebrating on my own. It was our last night in Spain, and I just had this beautiful time of just thanksgiving and offering a sacrifice of praise to God for everything that happened. I looked up and I realized I was sitting under a sign that said Via Sacra, and that basically means holy road. And that's what it was, man. The Camino was a holy road for me. It wasn't tourism. It wasn't sightseeing. It was a pilgrimage, a Christian pilgrimage. And that sense of sacredness, the ancient way, was a real gift for me. The theme of perseverance again, you know, I'm just moving into my 15th year of living in New York City. And this is the longest I've ever lived anywhere in my life. And New York can be hard, man. It beats you down. People are always leaving. It's financially prohibitive for vast majorities of people. It's just hard. And I was just reminded of the gift of perseverance, man. Do not quit. Keep your hand on the plow. Don't look back. And so perseverance was something I definitely took away from that. And I think, again, just this vision of simplicity, which is like, how is materialism getting a grip in my heart? Am I dragging, you know, is greed and luxury getting any roots in my heart? Am I carrying too much stuff? And how do I travel lightly as I follow Jesus into the kingdom of God? That was a real gift to me, you know. New York is a secular and materialistic place. It's based in many ways on greed and fame and attention and accomplishment. And it was a great reminder of that verse in 1 Peter 2 about realizing that there's a war in our souls and we're to live like pilgrims and aliens in our culture. So that was a great reminder for me. A lot of people have asked, do you want to do the Camino again? And the answer to that is 100% yes. There's more than one route, though the Camino de Santiago is the most famous, the most popular route. I think I've got at least two more in me. There's a northern route, which is a little harder, and that goes basically across the top of Spain, and then there's a Camino through Portugal, and so there's the Portuguese route, and I definitely have those two. I got to tell you, in terms of a bonding experience, if you were with a couple of brothers or sisters, like close friends, and you just wanted to have an immersive, bonding, life-giving experience, I can think of nothing greater. It's just in a category of its own. So I have been bitten by the Camino bug, and I definitely hope to do a couple more of these in my life. Concluding thoughts, because it's not just about the Camino, but also the Primal Path. Nate finished the Primal Path. It happened. He had a blessing ceremony in Finestre, and it was really, really meaningful. A bunch of men sent in messages to be read over his life, blessings. And, you know, it's pretty sacred, so I don't want to go into it. That's between me and Nate, some of the stuff that happened in there. But it was like one of the best moments of my life. You know, I've realized during the Primal Path, one of the things I felt God saying to me again is, John, if you're awake and paying attention, you'll realize that I'm fathering you like you're trying to father your son if you just pay attention to my work in your life. So I've had many, many moments of just seeing the good hand and kindness of God my Father in my life through this process. So I think I've probably gotten as much out of it as Nate has. The good news is I did finish the field guide. So the Primal Path is done. It's just getting formatted right now. So if you're interested in doing the Primal Path with your son or learning more about it, you can go to primalpath.co, primalpath.co, and sign up for the email address there, and I will send you an email link when the course is up. It should be out in the next couple of weeks. And then the last thing is I've got a new website coming, and that website is fathers.co, fathers.co, Fathers Collective. And the vision of Fathers Collective is intentional. It's intentional fathers raising children of consequence. And my goal is to help overwhelmed but determined fathers figure out how to parent skillfully. And so I'm going to do a weekly blog there. I didn't go into this trying to be, and I certainly don't view myself as some sort of parenting expert, but I just feel like it's just something God's just put on my heart to do. I feel like it's an assignment I sort of can't get away from. So I'm going to do a weekly article on being a father, and some cultural analysis, some history, theology, all of that good stuff there. So you can go to fathers.co and you can sign up for that weekly email list there as well. But I did want to say thanks so much, everybody, for listening along. Almost 10,000 people have listened in, which I really sort of can't believe. So for those of you who listened, thank you very much. I sincerely wish God's grace and favor and peace and mercy upon you. And I will see you online or around. Peace.